Unschooling mit meiner Mama. Ich mache hier nicht mit. Sie hat mich dazu gezwungen.
Das müsste ich noch so im Hintergrund reinschneiden. Sie hat mich gezwungen.
Prepare anything. I didn't even prepare an introduction because I think, what am I gonna tell people? Like, I met you because I wanted to buy a water filter from you, and then I bought it somewhere else because I was traveling. Then I got back home and it wasn't working because my faucet is a son of a bitch. And then we finally met up on your boat here on the island where I live, and I think this was one of the best water filter buying processes I've ever went through because I learned so much about what you do in your world, and you are a real environmental hero. And this is what I really like. And this is why you're here, Luisa. Thank you so much. I think you're frozen. Oh, no. Again.
Is this?
Jetzt bist du wieder da. Hast du mich gehört?
Yes, but you know what? Okay. I just gonna close my VPN. Maybe that's
okay. And if still
you're
lagging
frozen again, maybe
we
should restart.
We can turn
Sorry.
Off the.
It's not spontaneous
no, don't
anymore.
Worry. Don't worry at all. We can stop the camera. Maybe this helps as well.
Sorry, Alex. I don't know what's going on. You were frozen again. Did this happen before?
Sometimes, laggy, but we can turn off the camera if you want, so this could help.
Yeah, maybe it's a good idea. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I mean, now I'm not gonna see if you freeze, but
we don't know where we're in. We can just chat away, but I'm happy to. Do you want me to start and answer your question? Is this going to be in the podcast, our hiccups?
Yes.
All right. Supernatural. Well, thanks, Alex. Well, I really embrace people who come back after a long time, right? We met once, then you went away, you came back and you still wanted the same thing. So that talks about the quality maybe of, let's talk about the water filter. So apparently you really liked it. And we're happy to have people really convinced by the thing itself instead of selling, doing marketing, you know, if the product or something convinces by experience, then it's even better. Then I don't have to do the talk or run around and do marketing. So, yeah. Well, thank you for having me on the show. I don't know, environmentalist. It's been so hijacked in the past and in the current debate that I don't even dare to say that I love the ocean and to save it, because I live in a country where there's lots of corruption and there's lots of money going into the wrong pockets. And that includes environmental groups and efforts, and NGOs lately didn't have the best stance. So I kind of convinced just by doing, and maybe by the way we live or how we handle things, and that might be a good example and people might just copy it and kids can learn and maybe also go a path of loving the environment and understanding that it's our living base, right? So I don't want to politicize, I don't want to convince people. And I even know, you know, when we do beach cleanups, that we just touch the surface, because literally the ocean is so deep around our islands and the Canary Islands, like 2,000 meter deep, all the trash is probably, it's sinking, right? You don't see it. So whatever comes to the beach and whatever we clean there is just the surface, and it's just more kind of a community effort or a symbolic act. So it's kind of, you know, you're doing all these things, you're organizing beach cleanups with a lot of work and right now we have a festival in Tazakort, for example, where politicians are, you know, the first time they pick up this topic, like beach cleanups. We've been doing this for years and they never showed up, or they never invited us. They never gave us any money for all this volunteer work. I don't expect that, but now they found some money and they're kind of celebrating themselves, cleaning the beach, you know, as a political act. But it's good as it is, because it might trigger something and it might change something. So let's go back to the water filters. Yes. thanks. Sorry. I always talk in loops. I hope it's not annoying.
No, I love that.
Yeah. And then I try to circle back to what you were asking. So these filters are basically connected to the whole idea of avoiding trash, because this is basically the only thing we can do right now as individuals. Just try to not create as much trash by our choice, by what we buy and how we consume, how much we consume, you know. Unfortunately, we need bottled water on the islands, because the tap water isn't in the best quality. That's what people think. But there are ways to filter your water. So you can, you know, bottle it yourself, and you can use maybe a glass bottle, and then you don't have to take in all the horrible microplastics that are leaking from the plastic bottles. The reality is that, you know, they're selling these bottles for relatively cheap money, and people buy them, and especially tourists. We have so much trash accumulating here on these islands, and there is not a real working recycling system. So that means that every water bottle you buy, it's just ending up either in a landfill, or it has to be shipped to a bigger island, and nobody really knows what's going to happen there. There might be even a longer recycling route going back to the mainland, to Europe, where it's being processed and broken down into reusable fuel. But the reality is that's probably not going to happen. So on the island where I live right now, we have a big landfill, which is, it's a small island, and you can't imagine that how much trash is accumulating on this island, and it's just gonna thrown into a beautiful valley, and they just throw soil over it and forget about it. And plastic consumption is just increasing. So what we do, we try to convince people to buy a water filter and filter their own water, and reuse the bottles, and avoid buying more plastic bottles. That's one of the things we do. The other thing is that this filter really creates better water than you can buy. It just filters out all the heavy metals and, yeah, microplastics and nasty stuff you don't want to have in your body, right? So thank you for buying the filter, Alex.
And I will put the link into the description, so everyone who wants to check this out. I'm still a huge fan of this. I don't know how many filters I tried in my life. And especially on this island, I'm moving a lot, and every house has different faucets. And it's always a fucking struggle to fit your filter in that thing. And it's not cheap. And I think yours is so cool because it's small, it's handy, you can travel with it. This is the most important thing for me, because I will start traveling soon with my son. And I was like, oh my God, I'm a water freak. How can I survive? And yeah. I saw that and I was like, wow, this is my thing, I guess. I really love that water filter. I'm still using it. I'm addicted to it. And I hope everyone else will get addicted to it too, because it, for me personally, it feels like it was never so easy to filter your water at home. Mm-hmm. It's just plug and play. This is how the future looks like.
It's actually made for people like us who are always on the move, right? It's the perfect nomad filter, because these systems you have here, where you have to invest in a, you know, house installation, I mean, they're probably better or they can filter larger amounts, but you have to have a house for it, right? You have to live there. And the mobile filters I've seen, no, you're right. This one is really handy. And we use it on the boat, you know, because when we go for anchor or we give it to people who are going on a larger, longer trip, and they can pop it on and off the faucets there in the boat or in the camper vans, or when they go to, you know, hotels, you know, often you come to a place that you rented and then it's really late, you can't get any water, and you just end up drinking the horrible tap water. It's chlorate, full of chloride, and tastes awful. And if you have the filter there, you can just make your own water. So even business people, right, who always have to travel could use it. Could be probably a good idea.
I love that. Tell me more about your crazy nomad boat lifestyle, because I really, I mean, I visited you on your boat and I love boats. You didn't have to convince me to come on the boat. I'm crazy for those experiences. And I'm a bit jealous because it's not so easy for me to do that. I have one kid, two dogs and a cat, but one day I will be sailing with all these additional souls in my life. But you're so free. Tell me a bit about your freedom. Make me a bit more jealous.
Alex, this is so cute. I mean, I've seen people in all sorts of life constellations, you know, who have a boat life. It's not impossible. But, you know, hitchhiking might be a problem. You have to find a person or a boat that has enough space. But, you know, owning a boat and living there with, you know, your pets and animals. I've seen all sorts of animals who can live on a boat. But I would recommend to have, you know, always like interim times where you go on land, because you can't always stay on the water. It's not great for a dog that needs to run around and stuff, but it's possible. I've seen people living full time on a boat. So we don't live yet full time on the boat. It's more kind of related to the work we do. You know, we sail between islands and sometimes anchor and take people aboard to learn something about ocean chemistry. We do some water sampling, and it's kind of a mix of a boat where you know, you live, but you also work and you give back to the place you live. I've never been a really good tourist, to be honest. I always try to connect with the place I'm spending my time. So this boat is also kind of a invitation for people to join us in our work. So, and yeah, but it's beautiful to live on a boat. It's really nice. It really calms you down. It's you hear the water when you sleep. You know, it's, you have totally different vivid dreams when you're so connected to the water. It's really interesting. But reality is, owning a boat, I cannot recommend it to anyone who's not a billionaire. We basically work for the boat, because something breaks all the time. And you can't just ignore it, right? Like when you have a leak in your house, you can still live on it. But on a boat, you're just going to sink. You have to fix stuff. And we are no billionaires. So we came, actually, it was kind of an emergency situation. I mean, we've been sailing for a long time and back in Canada. But coming here to the Canary Islands, I thought, oh my God, you know, we live in a really, in a time where you don't know what's going to happen in the next 3 months. So we try to be as independent as possible and not relying on anything or anyone. And also giving space to others who might need assistance or help. So the idea was to have a boat where you can move away freely or resettle. So now it turns out, we have to work a lot. So we we can't just sail, right? And kind of got settled on one island and I'm growing bananas here, but I go in between the islands with the boat and sometimes we ship bananas.
Is it illegal?
It's legal. It's all legal. Why not? Yeah, I mean, it's still one of the last free spaces, right? To move around. I mean, you have to declare basically when you move from one country to the other, you have to check in at the customs and all that. But within Europe, you're free to sail around. Obviously, you have to pay when you go into a harbor. So they charge you per night. And that's not cheap. So when you have a boat that needs attention and you need to repair it, you have to save some money for being able to stay in the harbor to finance that. Yeah, but I mean, it's great. You learn so much, right? And that's probably one of the reasons I said, well, let's do it. We learn so much. You learn about orientate yourself, you know. Navigation is you know, sometimes you cannot rely on instruments, so you really keep watching the sky, you know, you keep watching the wind, the waves. You're so immersed in nature, and that's probably one of my the purpose is why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I want to understand everything, right? And so this is kind of ongoing learning, right? If you have a boat, and then you have to be a electrician, you have to repair a motor, you have to filter your water, you have to sew sails, and it's a lot of skills involved. So yeah, it's a big challenge, but it's also rewarding. You know, when it works, you're happy.
Really
don't be jealous, though. Just find someone who has a boat and come aboard for a sail. But don't be a boat owner. That's my advice to anyone listening.
No, that's not the plan. But I'm seriously, it's on my bucket list, and my bucket list is getting smaller and smaller. So there's not so much left to do.
Okay, why is that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just very, this year I've been able to take so many things off my bucket list. It was a really major breakthrough. And now I think the big things are coming nearer, you know, it's closer and closer, like sailing over the Atlantic Ocean. I would love to do it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I love pirates and everything. And I love boats. So this is something I need to do. Let's see if I'm able to pull through with this. But we have been practicing like crazy people. I've been taking the animals to random boat trips, just sometimes chilling for a day in Tesacorte in the Puerto on a boat and these kind of things to really make them used to the process of being at the Puerto and these kind of things. So I'm actively working on it. And you gave me this wonderful tip. There is a rally, transatlantic rally from basically Canary Islands to wherever it's nice on the other side. I don't think that I will be ready already to do it this year, maybe. I mean, I hope. You never know. I mean, could be really fast happening, everything. But I'm prepared for it. And you know what? What I would love to do, you have this water sample. You collect water samples from the ocean, and you give all these rally people the opportunity to take part in this, to really gather data and more information about our oceans, because we don't really know shit, I think I have the feeling. And I would love to do that. And I would always think of you like, oh my God, I'm doing this for you. So let's see if this works out.
Well, thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, it's one of the big of the stuff we started here when we started owning a boat in the Canary Islands. I met so many people who were preparing for the crossing to cross the Atlantic and go on a maybe circumventing tour around the globe. We're still connected, and it's amazing, right? You can look it up on these trackers, because apparently you need to be tracked. Some boats are like as you said, you love the pirates. So some boats are under undercover, but in these races, you obviously have to sign up, and you know your boat has a name, and you have your crew, and there's all the security stuff. So some of my friends from, I think, like, when did we start with this project to take samples? In 2022? Yeah, they were preparing endlessly. Their boat was next to ours, and and they had to fix stuff to get it ready so they don't, you know, have a major breakdown while cruising or crossing the ocean. And it took them forever. They had to delay and delay because then the motor was broken and they brought in an electrician and he fixed the wrong stuff and they had to wait another 2 months. So it's not unusual to wait to click, to tick off your bucket list, Alex, right? They were like delaying the whole thing for a year or something. So we became friends. We were hiking on La Palma. We were cleaning beaches while they were fixing their boat to get ready. And eventually they did. And now they are somewhere in the mid-Pacific. We just had a call, thanks to Elon Musk. We had a Starlink call the other day, and you could talk to them while they're cruising in the middle of the Pacific. It's really crazy. So we came up with this idea to not just go over the ocean, but also, you know, take some simple tools with you and make some tests of the actual state of the ocean, because most of the models we have now, where they also, you know, take out their climate prognostics and models where they, you know, paint the image of what nature looks like, it's often based on mathematical calculations. I mean, we do have satellite observation, there are buoys, and there are people with real sensors, but the in situ, it's called in situ when you're in the place itself at the right time and there are humans involved, there are not too many. So our idea was to deploy, you know, tools to everyone who's crossing the ocean. And then we can compare even from year to year. And that's what we did. We started off with really simple tools like seawater thermometer and then some pH strips. And people were taking samples and filters. And, you know, we even used a coffee filter to filter some stuff they found. They took pictures and we all logged it with the current GPS where they found the stuff. And it was about 20 boats who were joining this first, you know, it was more an experiment who would do it. And we were amazed how many people wanted, you know, join this. And now it's kind of, we gave it a name. It's called Sea Labs. And now we're part of this whole like annual race calendar of, it's called the ARC, Atlantic Rally for Cruisers. And I think this year we're going to deploy like 40 sensors. It's a lot for us because we don't have any funding for it. And we kind of try to get partners who chip in. And then we just give these boats sensors where they can read all the parameters. So it's not any more like in the first year where they had a thermometer. Now it's kind of a multi parameter stick. You just hold it in the water. After taking a sample, you hold it in the sample and then you read all these parameters. And it's really easy to do. And it's, I mean, lots of families are involved because, you know, like you have your animals, you have your kid. A lot of people are just going with a whole bunch of, you know, they rent a big boat and they take their grandparents with them. It's not as, you know, going in a race, it's more protected because you have a large fleet than rather than going on your own, because there you have more people, you know, involved, and if something happens they can help each other. And there's on every cruise there's something happening, right? Now we learned so much. Yeah, there are like masts are breaking, but also beautiful things. It's not just catastrophes, right? But it's easier to go in a larger group, because if something happens then the next boat could be with you within hours. And it's funny when they all start off, right? Like there's over 200 boats in Las Palmas de Gran Canaria. That's when they take off. They're all sailing out of the harbor and they look like, oh my God, this is the Spanish Armada. It's a huge fleet. And after a day, they don't see each other anymore. The ocean is so big. You know, they have their trackers and they see each other off on the map, but you don't see them from, you know, with eyesight. So even though they all go at the same time, they get lost really easily. But it's really great to have this community. We have super friendships evolved out of that. And as I said, like from the first year, these guys are still sending us pictures and tell us about their adventure. So it's possible, Alex, you can do it.
I really hope. So, and my idea was also that if there are so many boats, if my sinks, I can hop on the next boat. I really thought this is idiot proof. But tell me a little bit more about your sailing adventures. What was the craziest thing that happened to you while sailing?
I mean, as I said, I started sailing in Canada. And I mean, Canada, you always think like, oh God, that's a cold country. How can you sail there? But we lived on the West Coast near Vancouver. And it's one of the most beautiful sailing areas. So it has these tiny little islands called the Gulf Islands. And you can go there from the city of Vancouver. You just sail out and you're there in like 6 hours or something, which sounds long, but it's, you know, you have, you see the land all the time. So it's very protected. But learning to sail in Canada, it was tough, to be honest. It was so cold. I hated it, right? But it was probably a good stepping stone into this whole nautical thing, because a lot of these boat owners today, they have automated systems on their boat. Of course, they learn about sailing, but you can do everything by clicking a button, or, you know, you can sit in your lounge chair and you just play with your smartphone and the boat is, you know, remotely controlled. So what we learned was really tough, right? Like in Canada, it was, I think it was in November, and that, you know, you had to learn how to capsize yourself. I tried not to do it because the water was so cold in the harbor of Vancouver. And there are whales and there are, you know, like all these seals and a lot of seagrass. So you don't, and you see all these tankers. So we learned basically sailing in between these tankers. And yeah, and I mean, one of the trips where we came back from one of these islands, we were out looking for whales. It was like a whale watching trip. And nobody, there were no whales to be seen, right? We didn't see any. And just coming back into the harbor, I looked over the boat and I saw something in the water. It was like, you know, it looked like a large floating carpet, a round carpet. And then I looked closer and I realized it was the eye of a huge humpback whale. It was so huge. I couldn't believe it. So I'm looking into an eye. It was just, and he was like blinking at me and he was lying in the harbor. So we were out looking for whales in the ocean, and the whale was the whole time was just lying there and sleeping in the harbor. So that was, so cute. Yeah, that was something I wouldn't forget. And the other stuff, it's mine. I mean, you probably never forget the, these moments where you have encounters with animals are just unforgettable. They're kind of a dream world, right? Like when you have dolphins sailing with you, you know, they just love to go in the wake of the boat, just using the wave that your boat is making. And when you're sailing, you don't have the motor on, so it's very calm and you don't hear any noise, no engine noise. You just see these animals. And that happens off our islands, right? Every time we cross between La Palma and La Gomera, there's a place where, you know, this is where the dolphins live and they love to play with the boats. So it's really nice. That's something you don't forget. That's beautiful. But there are scary moments too when things break and, you know, when in the middle of the night, when you kind of are on an anchor, You know, you think, okay, I throw the anchor and I'm tired, I go to sleep, but that's not the reality. You always have to watch and listen what's happening. And we had a very safe anchorage. But then the wind picked up from 1 minute to the other, and it was kind of twisting all the boats that were around us. And we all were on the anchor chain. So that's quite dangerous, where you have to make sure that you don't bump in each other. And that's happened in La Gomera, because the wind came suddenly from a totally different, unexpected direction. So everyone woke up and people were naked on their boats, and it was dark, and everyone had to to lift their anchor chain and trying to, you know, find a new place where there is not as much wind, and you don't see anything because it's dark, right? So yeah, I mean, when you have a boat, there's always adventures involved. And it's always good to have, you know, to know the people that you're sailing with, because everyone has a different way to react under stress. It's good to know the people. How would they react? You know, if it's good to have people that can stay calm and not panic. My boyfriend usually loves to just roll around in bed and says, oh, I deal with it tomorrow. But not on the boat, I must say. He's I have seen a new personality in him when he's on the boat. I love him more. I say, oh my god, he does things, he gets things done in a second. Yeah, he likes to live
that is so cute.
Slower pace, because the world is so rushing, right? I understand that. So yeah, but the reality of everything, you have to work really a lot to get everything financed, right? These boats are expensive. Like when you break a sail, you have to basically you cannot always sew it. You can sometimes repair it, but usually, because it's under a lot of how do you say, like the drag of the wind is so strong, you have to do this professionally, right? You either know someone who knows how to fix sails, or you have to order a new sail, and that can cost you like 4,000 euros. So we sometimes end up in places working our heads off to get, you know, going, because you cannot leave the place without paying for the sail and the moorage and everything. So it's kind of a free lifestyle, but you also have to make some money for it. It's not possible without it. That's the reality of it. Would be great to not have to pay any money for it.
But you get a lot of adventures on the other hand.
Yeah, I mean, the whole life situation is like that, right? I could have had a really secure life, but I always break up when it's getting boring. So it's probably like that, right?
Yeah, I feel now, that.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a chance, right? To be alive is a chance to learn as much as it's out there. Probably never have enough time to realize everything.
But I really like what you said. Tell me a little bit more, because you mentioned lately to me that you are working with a homeschooled kid who is himself teaching other kids how to sail or something like this, because I met a lot of sailing families. And I always thought the kids are so calm and present. And I really think it is a very good situation for these kids I met, at least, to be on the ocean and to be responsible for their lifestyle, their whatever they are doing on that boat. Even if it's just fishing, or you know what I mean? But yeah. I think they are not in this system of being fed all day. It's quite the opposite. They are the active part. Yeah. In their own life, and I really like that. So I would like to know a little bit more about that, because for me, these sailing kids, they were always like, wow, impressionable.
Yeah, I'm always amazed when, you know, these families sign up for doing the ocean crossing, and these kids are already Yeah, they're like part of the crew, right? They have their roles, they have their jobs, and I think it's the best way to learn to be in the here and now and the real life situation, you know, away from all the virtual disturbance that's so dominating a lot of our life now. And so many kids are just in worlds that don't exist. So sailing, you can't fail, right? You have to learn these nautical knots. You have to read the weather. And I mean, it's mostly the parents who do the big chunk of giving those kids the opportunity to learn all that. But there are many ways to just copy, you know, what the adults are doing, and then you're taking over slowly, little tasks. I'm impressed by one of the kids. We gave a sensor like the last ARC trip. Their parents or his parents were already going on a large trip. They crossed the ocean from Boston, I think they were from the US, the Atlantic to Europe. Then they cruised through the Mediterranean, you know, the big dream of all the sailors who don't live in the Mediterranean. I mean, I'm lucky enough, I lived in Spain for a long time. For me, it's not as exotic anymore, but I can see how Americans love that Mediterranean lifestyle. But you know, they were boat people, and this kid, he was maybe five. Yeah, so he was they took him out of school for a year, and he learned, you know, to create a whole project about his water testing and the sensor. So he took all the data and then he put it into in a database or in a presentation. And when they went back finally after 1 year, he was able to go back to his school and teach the other kids, you know, about his measurements. And you know, they were even hooking up while he was testing through online tools. So he was really a showcase kid. But what we also noticed, like one of the boats last year, there were like kids from all ages, like 3 years, and one was 14. And, you know, they were showing each other, you know, everyone had a little job on the boat. But with the sensors, they were all equally interested. So they took turns in taking the tests, and you know, so everyone learned a little bit about ocean chemistry. What we do, we always give them some, you know, a little flyer or some information about, they understand what they're doing, why you know, are we testing the pH, or you know, what does it mean if an ocean gets too acidic. I mean, it's such a big water base, you can't really say right now, you need to watch it over 500 years. So whatever we're testing, we can't really draw conclusions in terms of pH. But, you know, if an ocean gets acidic, it has a direct effect on, let's say, these little mussels and these snakes that have to create their shells, because they can't do this in an acidic environment. They can't really, they basically lose the way to survive, because the calcification is affected. So there are some realities about chemistry and effects, but it's, we cannot draw conclusions for the whole ocean. It's very local. Let me circle back to the kids. So what we start to do now, because we realize this is, you know, it's super easy. Kids are so smart now. They can just use any digital tool and understand it way faster than we, when we started out. You don't have to explain much. You give them a sensor and they just switch it on and they go through the parameters and they understand it right away, right? While their parents still try to explain it to them. So it's super amazing. And yeah, what you said, right? Like, just do stuff, like just learn by doing it instead of theorizing too much. And that's probably the nice side of this project, that it's really involved with the water. You take a sample, you take the measurements, you write it down, and then, you know, you have to go out with your boat to find the right place. And so we try to work now with a sailing school in La Palma where the kids learn sailing. And one of the older kids, I showed her how to take the samples, and she's gonna basically run the project as the, let's say, group leader or team leader. And then she can show the other kids how to do this, and they take turns. And they will create also kind of a digital project out of it, because when you have the data, you want to show it to others. So they also learn the computer side of it, right? But they are out on the water. They have to go out with their little boats. And it's a nice mix. I think it's a great educational program. And then in the end, we can compare, let's say it's going over a few years, you can compare the years, and then you can draw a conclusion, you know, when you have a longer period of time where you observe something. You can't just go out once and say, oh my God, the ocean is acidic. So, and you also learn patience with it, because I'm not a very patient person, but first living in Spain, you have to really go one step forward and you go three steps back. It's really mañana. So it takes a long time, everything. And that's why we just ended up, doing it by ourselves. We applying for funds, it would never happen. So we kind of ordered these sensors. We just give it to the kids and we say, just start. Maybe one day we get get finance for all of that. But, you know, in this, like the parents have just chipped in and paid for the sensor, because the sailing club, they got a raise for their rent from the local government on the island. And they said, oh my God, we don't know how to pay our rent anymore. It's really a shame, because there's so much money on this island. They should do more for the kids.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And
it's pretty scary.
Yeah, I think it ends up always in some pockets. I don't know what's happening on this island, but it's a banana republic, I tell you.
It is, for sure. It is, for sure. I think kids' education comes last here, from what I've seen. It's like worse than the Middle Ages in the schools here.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really scary. And then on the other side, you have all these homeschooling people running around, living the exact opposite.
And learning so much, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, the school system is so outdated. Let's not just go into that. But it was an invention by the Prussians, basically, right? It was a kind of military drill. And it's not, obviously, kids need to learn something, but they want to learn naturally. So maybe really sending someone on a boat and crossing an ocean will teach them a lot, how to rely on people, you know, how to work in a team. How to understand that this vast ocean is also fragile, you know. And I think coming back maybe to these cleanups that we do on remote beaches, where we try to anchor in front and then we either swim to the beach or we take a kayak, or, you know, going there and then you try to feel, you know, you think like, oh, it's a kind of a Robinson situation here. I'm going to a remote beach. Nobody was there, but that's not, that's impossible in this world, right? And not on the Canary Islands, even though on La Gomera, there are lots of beaches you can't access by a road. So you have to take a boat or you hike in. And you wouldn't believe how much trash is there, right? There's, it's not comparable to what I hear from South America or Bali, but it's still a shame. So, once you clean the beach like this with all the efforts, you know, the learning as a young human is that, oh my God, maybe I don't buy all this shit that I don't need, you know. When we did cleanups in Vancouver, in Canada where I lived, 500 people would show up, and it was they love to be together and do something that they felt has a meaning. And everyone brought their kids, you know, kids and dogs, and, you know, it was kind of the thing itself was just so uplifting. And everyone said, like, oh my God, I look now at all the packaging that I see when I go to a supermarket. I just change also my behavior, what I, the choices I make, you know. Do I buy maybe this pickles in a glass container because I might reuse it for something else? Or do I buy wrapped up bananas in a plastic wrapper? So that changes, right? Like when you do stuff like this, which are hands-on and really practical, it has an effect on your behavior. And that's my only hope for changing things in a world that seems to be out of control, which I don't think is. But let's take back some control if we can, right? For our place where we live, like our community. But as a nomad, I don't know if I have. I mean, I try to create communities where I live, but maybe it's the whole planet, right? As a sailor, you're always here and there, but it's the same for you, right? Like as a nomad, you come and go and you create new communities where you arrive with the people who are there. Maybe that's also a good thing. Sorry, I'm circling back. I'm always becoming so
full. No, I love it. I love this because you know what? Some people, they are so hard to interview because if you ask them one thing, they will just answer this one thing. And then you are like, okay, thank you so much for the deep conversation.
I have a very hysterical female brain here that's just processing so many things at once. But I think I see my life anyways kind of as a puzzle that was already complete when I was born, and then it just broke in all these pieces, and I kind of try to get all the pieces back and to complete it again, you know.
That is so nice.
It's kind
of what I always tell my parents that, because they are always like, you have such a chaotic lifestyle. I mean, the last years they didn't say anything yet, but when I started to live,
used to it now.
Yeah, they are used to it. They don't have no hope of me changing. But I was always trying to make them understand that I'm searching for the missing puzzle pieces, because I'm building something over here. I cannot see the image yet, but I'm very sure that piece by piece, there's more to my story that makes sense. And you know what? That thing you said about building communities and connecting and these kind of things, I really feel like, yes, on one hand, sometimes I'm sad to leave people behind that I really learned to love, and then I go to the next place, but we grow so much stronger because we carry our story like through the world. Because most of the people I know from, let's say, Germany, my old life in Germany, like million years ago, they never really travel. They never really connect with anybody outside their social circle they had for 50 years. So I think what we do is like, we spread information and vibration. This is, I think, very, very important, because I see us as little lights connecting here and there. And if we all in one place, it doesn't shine anywhere else. So it doesn't make sense if we all stuck together. So I think we have to spread and travel and connect, communicate, and align our vibrations and these kind of things. I think it's a big responsibility, so to say.
Yeah, and, absolutely. Isn't it? I mean, the planet is so it's big and tiny at the same time. It's really amazing. I hear stories from these sailors that are, you know, meeting again and again and again, even though they were going into different directions, and it's, you know, they end up in the same places in the world. But it's also, I think, in the backpacking world, similar, right? Like there are just some places where they're, you know, they're popular and then everyone goes there. And I don't know. I mean, you're totally right. It's probably really good that we are not staying in one place all the time. Yeah. And, you know, whatever you learn in one place, you can bring it to the next, right? And have a trickle, what do you say, triple effect?
Ripple effect, yeah.
A ripple triple. Yeah. And then, you know, you also connect with like-minded people. I think there is not a coincidence that you came back to visit us on our boat, you know, coming back to the harbor. You're drawn to ports and people and boats. So probably interconnecting with these other light workers, it gives you so much power too. That's what I found in La Palma, you know, when we created kind of, not out of an emergency, but out of the understanding that you, in certain situations, the government doesn't help you. You know, yeah. We tried to create these networks covering, and it's interesting to understand that, you know, alternative societies need basically a lot of these things that we find in the classical society frame. You know, we need some sort of security, we need food, you need probably once in your life you need a doctor, hopefully just once. You need you know, all these things that actually the fabric of society is made of. But something went wrong, I think, in the, you know, how it's been managed and run. So what we did in La Palma and also here on La Gomera, where less people live, but La Palma has a big potential of creative people who came from all sorts of life with a sort of professional backgrounds and recreated their life. We created a circle of people to help each other. For, let's say, someone knows how to build the baking oven out of clay, or, you know, solar panels made from trash, and how to, oh yeah, that was a great project. And, you know, in the north of La Palma, where the clouds from the Atlantic come in and actually cover the, I think, above 800 meters, but I'm not sure which, where's the threshold where the clouds rain down and are captured by these trees, the pine trees, and then they create the drinking water of La Palma, right? So the island only gets its water from the clouds. And we made this project where we would build like a tall tower and put some mesh up to collect the rain from, or the
moisture. That was you!
Clouds. Well, not me. Oh my god, no, a few people together.
Yeah,
there are like two or three projects like this on La Palma. And so this was just someone found this on the internet and said, oh, let's do it. And they ordered the stuff, and then we came together and we built it. And this one Italian businesswoman who just stepped out of society and built her kind of cave home, and she said, I want to do this, I want to capture water, and we all learn how to do this. So, you know, staying in one place also gives you, you know, the networks grow and you get to know people better, and there's more, it's good and bad, right? I'm trying to say that, you know, traveling is important and moving places too, and but you can also go into a kind of a microcosmos in the place where you are, but you have to be surrounded by like-minded people. So these islands are interesting because so many nomads ended up there, right? And some of them, they reached an age where they would say, oh, I'm done. I can't just, I don't want to go on a world trip anymore. I'm not young enough to restart. Maybe also your physical strength isn't there. Or they said, I love it here. It's, everything is here that I need, right? I might have interesting people where I can have good conversations. I can grow my own food. The water is falling out of the sky that I could drink. You know, it is not too hot, not too cold. It's really good climate. So for some who had traveled a lot, and even some of these sailors who've been circumventing, they come back to me and saying, like, you know what, where you are right now, it's actually not a bad place. Right. But it's more to that. I think you have to have the urge to get settled. You know, if you feel like there are still puzzles missing, and, you know, the situation where you live isn't, or you might even lose puzzles, maybe it's time to move on. I understand that.
That's true.
Yeah. So But that said, I'm super grateful for all the opportunities, and that's what we try to do as well. We try to open opportunities, you know, for young people or people with skills. So anyone who wants to join our project, we are also happy to have real scientists advising us. I mean, we work with marine biologists now on a whale watching boat that takes samples. That's really good feedback. And yeah, people love the project. It's really good.
And you know what? I learned the last 3 years, my real job is in environmental things and marketing and these kind of things, outreach. And super. What I found really, really difficult is to reach people here on this island who are responsible for trash management. Like, that is impossible. There's nobody, I feel like. I tried for at least 2 years, and I figured for myself, it's nice what we do at work, but it's not working because we try to connect with the wrong end of the story, maybe. And that brought me back to this responsibility we have. We can try as much as we want to get funds, to get funding, to get connections in this world. But in the end, I think we need to operate out of the system and find solutions out of this box, because what's happening inside this box is so fucking weird that it's almost, for me, it felt like it's lost. It's just so chaotic. It's lost. It's so damaged. It's maybe intended like to work like that. I don't care at this point anymore. But what I learned for me, and especially regarding garbage and what you use at home, I mean, we are travelers and we are really conscious with what we eat, where we buy it, and these kind of things. But still, since we live on the Canary Islands, we have so much trash. We had less trash when we lived in Berlin, just because there was a shop that had no packages at all. And here, I mean, sometimes I see plátanos in plastic packages. Like, these fruits don't have their own package by nature. Like, what the fuck is that? I don't get it. I've seen peeled oranges in plastic packages. I didn't get it. I thought it's a joke. Like, literally, this is a real life thing I only thought existed in memes on the internet. But it is here on this island. And we really are blessed because we live in a fucking postcard. It's beautiful everywhere. And people are like, oh, we love our island. And then they throw away the trash out of their window, literally. And they don't care because it's falling into a barranco and they cannot see it anymore from their point of view. And if you just move 2 meters, you see the whole landslide of trash they left behind. So I really feel like there are so many foreigners coming here with so many good intentions, like, oh, let's do permaculture, let's collect the trash and these kind of things. And what I learned from the people who are originally from here, they really like that because they learn so much things about their own nature and how to protect it. And that I found very beautiful. So,
yeah, I have to agree. I mean, the system is broken, and we not just see it with, you know, whatever waste management. It's, I mean, on every level. And maybe that's one of the reasons why people started self-organizing. And you're right, what you're saying, right? Like, maybe this is a good approach to, and many people do this, like, you know, I have a little eco finca where I grow veggies and fruits. And when I bring stuff to my customers or friends, the network where we exchange food, everyone is so conscious about this. We just do it differently. And hoping that this has the triple ripple effect again, right? And it might, and people understand it now. I can see it. And it's so sad because the last two generations were basically the ones creating all this trash. Like, these islands, they didn't have all this plastic stuff. They were super self-sustained for 100,000 of years. They were doing well, right? They didn't need the crap. So we have to relearn basically with them. But it's a very it's a difficult path, very sensitive issues to come as a outsider, and you still feel that when you approach, because you mentioned administration and politics, it's really hard. They don't really want to listen to you when you come from, even when you come from another island. So I have no problems because I'm basically registered here on La Gomera. They wouldn't talk to me in La Palma because it's a different island. So it's ridiculous, right? I mean, and even within the islands, they one town hall is, there's a lot of greed or enviness. I don't know where it comes from. It must be from a time where things, resources were very scarce. So they're kind of self-protecting, like make America great again in a...
It is so true.
In a miniature, like from one town hall to the other. And but I realized, and first I was mad, you know, when I came here like 3 years in La Palma, and I was so naive. I thought, oh, let's talk to the mayor, and I have all these ideas about how to clean this one beach where all the trash is being thrown down a cliff, and Monsanto banana pesticides. Like I even filmed them, containers just thrown off the cliff. So I said, okay, that's bad. Let's talk to the mayor, but not blaming them, because, and you know, I was assuming, coming back from Canada, where we kind of had kind of an open democratic discussion culture, where I thought, I just say what I think, I'm open, you know, I'm not blaming, I'm just saying, listen, we have this one problem, I'm here, we can do it, we just go there and we clean it up. Oh my God, I was just open up a box of worms of shame and ignorance, and I had to beg them that they would allow me to clean the beach because they didn't, they wanted it for themselves, or they were kind of felt, you know, shameful because foreigners come to their island and they're cleaning up the shit. It's like you have a party at home and you invite your friends and they have to clean up first. You know, it's kind of there's also pride, you know, they don't want. So I try to understand that. And it's until today, they're completely ignoring me. But when I came, I wrote a big presentation, kind of an idea, a list of ideas, what we could do. We could have a recycling fest in the port. We could do nautical knot workshops. You know, the sailors have a lot of stories to tell. They were sailing around the world. Let's visit boats and have like movie nights, or, you know, stuff like this. They were never answering me. They never called me. He has my WhatsApp number, the mayor. He once sent me a message when he wanted something. But then I realized they're doing the stuff. Now we have a recycling fest in the port. Never had this before. But they would never invite me because, you know, I'm not part of the island. And I say, okay, I was first mad. I thought I'm being ignored. I'm a woman. If I would be a guy, it would be different too. It's a big macho culture here, I must say. If I would be married to a Palmero, you know, or something. Yeah. But they keep ignoring me, but they're doing it. They're doing it. And I say, okay, let's step back. This is the puzzle that's, you know, it's just reassembling itself like a spike protein. It's reassembling. The thing is coming together and it's doing maybe something good. Whoever is responsible for that. So I don't get the fame, you know, forget it. But it's a change. Now they are sending videos that the local kayak rental is cleaning the beach. They never cleaned the beach in years. They're just circling around in the harbor with little butterfly nets and fishing out some stuff. But that's good. So at least there is some consciousness about it and things are going to change. But you know what? As you said, coming back to this point where we see the system is broken and a lot of money is wasted, and Spain is famous for that. In fact, right now Pedro Sanchez, our prime minister of Spain, is being grilled by the EU, which is itself a corrupt system.
Yes.
But they are grilling him, so they throw him under the bus because they can't hide the corruption anymore. It's just became so obvious. And it's on a local level, it's the same stuff, right? But there are beautiful things that happened. For example, the asphalt factory they wanted to do right in the Biosphere National Park.
Yes.
Did you know that? Near the Caldera de Taboyente, which is a beautiful place.
There was lots insane. Of protest,
and they moved it back to the lava fields, you know, where nature is broken anyways. So, that's being prevented by civil unrest. And there was something, right? Like it had a positive impact that people came together. So I'm not giving up hope.
No, we should not. And I really saw that for several really insane ideas, like fast lanes through, I think it was Garafia, through the most beautiful nature you can imagine, and people really went crazy, and they defended their land and everything. And I saw mostly foreigners defending the land over there, but they made it. And this street is not going to be built. So what I really like is the civil unrest thing, because we are here on such a small piece of land. And this is working really well here, I feel, because if there are like 40 people on the street, you cannot run over them and start building. It is impossible. So what I see, like this big manifestations, is this even a manifestation? Manifestation in English? No, it's demonstration.
But if you have, I'm English now too. I don't know. Oh, how do you say? Oh, yeah, demonstration probably.
Demonstration maybe.
Yeah.
If people come together and they protest and these kind of things. So I think if we see like 1 million people in the streets of Berlin, it doesn't mean shit to me. But if I see like 50 people here on the street, I know they will change something, because we're only like 10 people on the island. So
it's super brave, because you
super brave, isn't it?
Right? Like when you show your face here. You know, this is, you will never get the funding for whatever you want to do, but, you know, I think you have to, it works differently. I'm always told by people, Luis, you're too fast. Don't rush it. Take it easy. Go with a smile, give them, you know, be gentle. And it's true, you know, on the surface, people are super gentle with each other. The Palmeros, you know, there are some rough ones too, but it's always smiling. They have their fiestas, and there is a different way to approach problems. It's never, you know, the German way. I grew up in Berlin. You know, we say what we think. It's horrible for others. They can't cope with this here, right?
Yes.
We mean good, but it's always sounds like an offense and or like an aggression.
Yes.
And you have it. Maybe we have to be super smart. I mean, it. You also need to learn the language, or, you know, to understand it. You probably give them the idea they had the idea, right? So if you want to do change, let them invent the change. And I mean, everyone loves. They love their islands. They are super protective. But yeah, as you said, I don't understand why. You know, we do cleanups as well with counting cigarette butts. And there was one beach, it's called El Remo.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in El Remo. Yes, El Remo, which is, it has like three restaurants, fish restaurants. And there's always a long waiting list for these restaurants. They only have a few tables. So what do people do? They go outside and have a smoke. And the beach is full of cigarettes around these fish restaurants, and we did a cleanup, and because the cigarette butts were between the rocks, and it was really tiny spaces, so all the kids came to the cleanup. They were the ones picking up these cigarette butts, and I've never in 2 hours, I think we counted like over 1,000. You know, we have these measuring cylinders where we throw them all in, and then you know, okay, this is 500, this is 1,000. Within 2 hours, we found like thousands of cigarette butts, And it was so ironic that these little kids who don't smoke have to pick up because they have little hands. It's like slave work. They have these little hands to reach into the stones. And they were like, they loved it, right? Because, oh, I have more. And, you know, it was like a game to them. But I felt like, oh, my God, this is the state of society. Their fathers throwing the cigarette box, you know, snipping them out of the car windows. And the kids pick them up. So I have hope that this generation, you know, because I think nobody did this before, that this generation might smoke less or think twice about throwing cigarette butts somewhere. Yeah, so yes. It's really outrageous. I've never seen such a quantity in such a short time. So people here, they smoke like unbelievable. Even though they live in the cleanest air, supposedly, in the Atlantic Ocean, right? In the beauty, in the paradise. Maybe humans don't know what to do in paradise. They are never happy enough. They need to smoke to cope.
I mean, waiting for your fish is hard work in a little no, but you know what? I really like the beach because you can go there with your dogs without anyone bothering you. But the smell of the whole beach area is ridiculous. The first time I went there, I thought I was broken inside because I couldn't get rid of this trash smell. And then when I figured out, okay, they just collect trash, like they just, it is, I don't even have words for it. They have trash cans, but it's not enough for all the people over there in El Remo. And it was all around that. And in between were dogs, cats, and cars. Mm-hmm. So the people were driving over the trash, dragging it through the whole parking area and everything. Oh. And there are people living right next to it. So it is very small. It's crowded. And it is so, so trashy. Mm-hmm. And I really had the feeling like they see this with their own eyes every day. They live right next to it. It's not even 5 meters to their real door. Mm-hmm. How? It is impossible. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even spend half a day there without going crazy and thinking about how to fix it. But I don't know. Some people have more, how can I say that? They have less aggression against these kind of things. I don't know if they have a different connection to nature. But I couldn't. El Remo was for me like the no-go area since that day. I never came back.
But there's also a blaming. They love to blame others for their own crap. It's probably also a human condition. One of my favorite treats. You know, when we have these currents around the islands that are changing and they sometimes come from the African continent, of course, all the microplastics are from Africa. You know, yes. That's what they say. It's like, oh, yeah. No wonder. This is, nobody takes care of the trash there. So pointing fingers is also, yeah. But, you know, that's probably one of these things where education could play a role. But the thing is, as you are a parent of an unschooled child for a good reason, because direct confrontation or lecturing doesn't work. You can, and you know, people are saturated with advice. You know, you don't spend a day without someone giving you an advice. So for me, I think the only thing that works is seeing or understanding with a practical, you know, to have these effect right affecting you. So basically we have to throw them in the trash and swim in it to understand or something, right? Like if you can't just hand out flyers and say, oh, we are also green and this is the blue economy. What's the, you know, what the town hall is doing. But yeah, the cleanup helped. When we went to this cleanup in El Remo and the kids from these parents were picking up the cigarette butts, I think it helped a little bit because they might be different when they grow up. They don't throw out the cigarette butts from the car window.
I'm sure.
So, yeah, so that's why just doing stuff is for me the only solution right now. Or, you know, I mean, they learn it in school. They learn all that. It has changed, though. There are no composting bins in La Palma. I'm super envious because we don't have them in La Gomera. So communities have these brown bins. Remember in Berlin, we had them for years, right? Where you could put all your waste, the veggie waste, and from cooking and all that. And that started, I think, just, oh, don't let me lie, I think maybe 2 years ago in La Palma. I know the girl who was running the project, and she's Spanish. She was embraced by the communities. And now they have all these bins on the crossroads, you know, and they pick it up. But when you open the brown bin, it's full of plastic bottles.
Yes.
Oh my God. So, yeah. Oh, that needs another lesson to learn. I mean, back then when people had their animals at home and their gardens, right, they would just throw the trash right over the fence. And like here in my village where I live, people reuse everything they have in the garden. There is no garden waste. You know, you compost, you make you improve the soil, and you feed the cabras, the goats with it. Nobody has any leftover veggie waste. That's a problem of city people, not on the land.
It is. Indeed. Indeed. You know
what? So, farming revolution. Yes, let's do it. Well, thanks, Alex, for having me. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't went too much into philosophical.
No, I really enjoyed our talk, I need to say. And I think the most important thing that you said, I mean, you said a lot of important things, but self-responsibility and learning by doing, and not just learning by sitting down and listening to someone saying something. So I think these two things, you have a history. Yeah, I mean, your experience in environmental stuff and everything. So I really think, take your kids to a beach cleanup day or a cleanup forest day or whatever day, because for my kid, it changed his whole attitude about plastic. I mean, we've always been conscious, but when I made him walk through the forest and pick up trash for the first time, it was years ago.
Yeah.
It still lasts, and I'm not doing it every day. It is still in his mind, and it had an impact. So do it, people. It's really life-changing.
Yeah. And, you know, we are blessed to live on these beautiful islands. So we have to protect those where we are. All right.
And I will put all the links to what you mentioned, water filter and everything, in the description. So
super. Can just click. Thank you so much for listening to my stories and to all these thoughts. I hope the puzzle came together somehow and might inspire people to get hands-on stuff. You know, it doesn't have to be a big logo or whatever. It can be done with few people, and it makes you happy afterwards to come back and know, okay, I did something to protect the place I live or that I love or that others love. That has a triple effect. Okay, Alex. Well, thank you. Hey, I wish you all the best and see you soon on the boat in the harbor by the water. Take care.
Nice. Vielen, vielen Dank. Ich gucke mal, ob...
Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please support my work. Check the podcast description for the details and have a wonderful rest of your day.